This is the MLWRadio.com network.
Welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling and around these days, mainly opinions about the G1 Climax Tournament. It is July 27. We have day 8 of the G1 Climax behind us and we are looking at days 6, 7 and 8 of New Japan's biggest tournament during the summer or during the entire year, I must say. I am your host, Striga, and I am, as always, joined by Dylan Harris. Dylan, how are you holding up after 8 days of G1 Climax action?
You know, I am feeling super fresh right now when it comes to the G1 Climax. The fatigue that is much talked about has not really affected me at all yet.
Yeah.
I feel very spry about watching these shows. We watch them live, and for me, that means in the middle of the night. I feel like, and you told me this earlier when we reported a few days ago, but I think the listeners need to reconfirm this because I think we're both going a little crazy. I feel like last year's shows started earlier, and it's just a feeling that I have. I don't know if it's the Mandela effect going on right now, but I feel like we used to record shows at 4 and 5 a.m. after the shows were over, and we're recording right now. It's 9:30 in the morning where I'm at. I woke up at the very normal time of 1:30 a.m.
Of course.
after I went to bed last night, ready and willing to watch the show, and here we are again, Striga, talking about more G1 Climax shows. My favorite thing in the world to do, and I can't wait for the show today.
So I'm just looking at the New Japan website here, and the G1 shows this year usually start at 6:30 p.m. Japanese time. And most of last year's G1 Climax shows also started at 6:30 p.m. Japanese time.
I'm losing my mind.
That's true.
There's something wrong with...
Some of them on the weekends started earlier, some of them later, but most of them started at 6:30, yeah. I don't know what it is about you. Maybe you're going crazy and you don't know about it.
It's all the stress of life weighing on me.
The fatigue is hitting you and you don't recognize it.
It's making me enjoy the shows more somehow because I'm losing my sanity. I blame you for this one.
You always blame me for everything. Come on.
You take away everything. Relationships, friends, and what else can you take from me? And you bury all my favorite wrestlers on the show. You don't let me get anything.
I can't take away your favorite wrestlers too.
I can't get anything on the show, and it's making me go crazy.
That was the plan all along, Dylan. The plan all along. But let's get into G1 Climax talk here. We are pushing back the usual talk we do about the undercards to the end of the show because we have an email question that revolves around these undercard matches. So let's just jump right in there. We are starting with day 6 of the G1 Climax from the Big Palette Fukushima, drawing 2,500 fans, just like last year. First G1 Climax match, this was a Block B show. We had Michael Elgin getting his first two points against Satoshi Kojima, 13 minutes, 9 seconds. He won with the Elgin Bomb. This was a very good start to this G1 Climax show.
Oh yeah, I really like this match. I think Elgin right now, and we'll talk about him a little later, but I think he's definitely been a strong MVP candidate for Block B, and this was a really good start to the show. Like you said, Kojima and Elgin actually have some pretty underrated chemistry together. I think their styles work really well together. They're not two guys you kind of put together in your mind, but they had some good stuff here. Kojima breaking out the Desperation Lariat at the end was real good.
Oh, man, yeah.
And, you know, yeah, yeah, so some real good stuff here. They kept it in a good amount of time, too. I think when we're going to talk about some matches like this a little later. We talked about them last time, that match with Zach and Yoshihashi. There's been a couple of matches like that, and that's been kind of a pattern of having those matches kick off the G1 Climax matches that are simple and good and to the point. This was a little bit above those matches, I thought. I thought these guys went a little harder and a little better, and I really liked what we saw here.
Yeah, just like with Nagata and Yoshihashi on the first day of the G1 Climax tournament, as you said, they went a little bit above those usual tournament opening matches that are positioned on number 6 of the card. This was a very good match, and both showed that they really are still strong candidates for this tournament. Satoshi Kojima still doesn't have a win on his side, and let's see how that turns out in the end. For Big Mike, he had 2 points after this show, and we were going to talk about him later, as you mentioned. But first of all, here now we have the match between Evil and Tama Tonga. We talked about Evil and Tonga on the last show, having good chemistry in their tag match as well. And this transitioned perfectly to their singles match, as again, the finishing stretches that Evil has in this tournament are out of this world. And he always manages to get a finishing stretch around his Evil STO finisher. And here Tama Tonga tried to get his finishing move in, but still Evil was able to defeat Tama Tonga here.
Yeah, and this was more along the lines of what I just said, a very compact match, yeah. But for what they did a good job with it. And like you said, the finishing stretch was really good. I loved Tonga doing his misdirection spot, and then Evil turning it around into a lariat and kind of go off. I thought that was a real good stuff there. And like you said, Tonga got some great near falls. And Evil, he's just having a great tournament, too, and definitely a strong candidate in Block B. I really love what we've seen from him, actually, and this was a very solid match.
Yeah, and you can see that the people are really getting behind Evil due to his performances that he has here in the G1 Climax. This started out when he had his win over Hiroshi Tanahashi in the New Japan Cup earlier this year, but then they kind of didn't use him in singles action a lot after that, but he's becoming really popular amongst the New Japan fans here during G1 Climax time. And he is not the only one, Dylan. Juice Robinson is gaining more and more fans, more and more popularity, as I pointed that out on Twitter earlier today when I watched Juice Robinson's entrance, and his entrances are now part of the psychology of his matches. As after day one and day two, he already was pretty banged up walking to the ring. And this continues on every single day, and he's getting more banged up every single day. Here now he faced Minoru Suzuki. And, you know, I was tweeting about the legwork that Minoru Suzuki did on Juice Robinson, and I said, this has to... If the legwork doesn't lead to a finish in this match, it would never will. But what the legwork that Minoru Suzuki did led to was that Juice Robinson was unable to really pull out his signature moves and really to beat Minoru Suzuki, because Minoru Suzuki was always one step ahead when it came to offense and also in the defensive aspect of the game. Juice Robinson didn't really have it in this match, because Minoru Suzuki was always targeting the legs, and in the end was able to benefit from that with his Gotch-style pile driver.
Yeah, I thought this was a pretty good match, similar to Suzuki's match versus Sonata, but I think Juice fit his role a little better than Sonata did. He had a little bit more fire. Like you said, it played into his offense really well. Juice did some great selling, as you mentioned. Some really, really great selling, actually, yeah, in this match and his later match that we'll talk about. But, you know, like you said, I thought both men played their roles very well. Suzuki was great punching Juice, and Juice was great taking it, getting fire. The crowd reaction proved that. And nothing bad at all to say about this. Not any sort of match of the year or anything, but just a really solid and fun match to watch.
Right. Next up, we have the semi-main of this show. Kenny Omega going up to 6 points, defeated Toru Yano, who was at this point still at 2 points, by countout in 11:31. And you go first on this one.
Okay, let's just ignore this entire match.
No.
And, no. Okay, well, no, let's just ignore this entire match and go straight to the finish, because I think when I watch this match, I'm not going to lie to you here. I think if you have any sort of legitimate, pure pro wrestling scale, this has to be a zero on a scale of 1 to 10.
Maybe, yeah.
But this went so far into just absurdity.
Yes.
That I'm not going to lie to you. There were moments that I actually smirked at. I think my favorite part of the match was when Red Shoes came off the top rope for a sledge on Omega and Yano. That was actually pretty
cool. Kenny wanted to give Red Shoes the Katayoko no Tenshi because he had powder in his eyes.
Yeah. Red Shoes was definitely a star of this match here.
Yeah.
And it was just nonsense,
yes,
to be honest
with
you.
Total, it was like, nonsense, of course, yes.
Yeah. Like, you know, it's fine. I do have, even by those standards, even by my low, low standards, I do think there is room to criticize this match. And that, first of all, would have to be what I always say in these Yano matches, is that this was another 10-minute Yano match that's just way too long for all this. Two, I wish that they would have done, if it were up to me doing this, I would have had Yano score a very quick win, or somebody score a very quick win or something like that, if they would need Omega to win here, and set up this exact match for the next show on the undercard, not in G1, because I don't think that's the place for this kind of match, is G1 semi-main event matches. And third, despite all of this, it is somewhat amusing to me that this guy, who this company has basically been a vanity promotion for him and Okada this year. Omega has been one of the main players in this company, the Tokyo Dome main eventer, very focused on, very much talked about, and even he can't get a pin on Toru Yano here. It's ended in a countout, and I thought that was somewhat amusing to me. And like I said, there were parts that were funny, and if you're more into this, you'll like it a lot, but I can't. There's no way you could tell me this was a good match on any sort of, you know, scale of that nature. It was just fun for what it was.
Well, in the aspect of the style those two were going, and Japan, what I love about Japanese wrestling is that Japanese wrestling is serious, but it can go into a comedy direction very quickly. And also, it can get back into a very serious direction as quickly as it went into the comedy direction. You know, for a lot of promotions, for a lot of smaller groups, for groups like Osaka Pro or groups like that, of course, they were heavily driven by the comedy style, by the so-called Owarai style. That's comedy, it's a style of comedy in Japan. Yeah. And on those shows, usually the second match of the show is a comedy match. And you can see that even going to promotions like All Japan and Big Japan in these days, that the second match on those shows is usually somewhat of a funny match. And people still like it, and people still don't think that it harms anything else on the show, because it's just the Owarai aspect of the show they are watching. And that's what I love about Japanese wrestling. And people in Japan, of course, know that, and people watching wrestling from Japan for a lot of years now know that as well. And that's really why I like Toru Yano, and that's, I think, why a lot of people in Japan like Toru Yano, because he just provides something totally different that you don't have on these New Japan shows. Also, a totally different pace. And me, I absolutely love this match. I literally cried tears when those two were doing the whip-ins with their legs tied together with duct tape. That was absolutely amazing, I thought. And the finish also was amazing with Kenny Omega really outsmarting the guy who wrote the book that involves every dirty trick in pro wrestling right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's all fine. You said it yourself. The second match of the show is where this belongs, not semi-main
G1.
Yeah,
that's a good point. Maybe you could, they should have put it at the sixth position where we had Elgin and Omega. Elgin and Kojima.
I don't know. Like I said, I don't mind Yano in his role. Like, similar to someone I know, and I think many consider the greatest professional wrestler of his era, and that's Kendo Kashi. When he's doing his thing on undercards and crazy shows with Pandita, that's great. But if I see him in the, you know, the Odo tournament and making the semifinals, that's when I say, I don't know about this. And, you know, I think you can say something about Kendo Kashin's former tag team partner here, Toru Yano, as well. I don't think G1 is the place for this. That's my only problem. But I'm not going to sit here and say I wasn't entertained at all by this match, because there was funny stuff here. There really was. I liked some of what they did. It was amusing in its own way.
Yep. You know. I think that's great. And that's exactly what the purpose of that match was. But going here to the main event, after Kenny Omega got his third win in the G1 Climax, it was Okada's time to keep up with Kenny Omega against Zanada, which he did in a match that was 21 minutes long. I just sat here watching this match. I really don't want to talk about any particular spot, but I just want to talk about the general match itself, Dylan. Something that we talked about when we mentioned Zanada's perception in New Japan Pro Wrestling is that his style is very smooth. And the same goes for Okada in a lot of his matches. And those two clashed here with their smoothness. And everything looked brilliant and everything looked beautiful. And that may be part of, I don't want to necessarily say problem, but in some aspects, we talked about Yoshihashi being not that smooth, and in some aspects, a little less smoothness would have served this match better, I think.
Yeah, I actually have put that down in my notes as well. I know that these guys are both super very clean wrestlers. I admire them for their skill and how they perform, but like I said, I kind of think it would help them stand out, help one of them, particularly Sonata, stand out more if they were more like that, you know, more like you were talking about with Yoshihashi. I also noted another problem with this match. Three Rainmakers, to put this away. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing this with the Rainmaker, and we've seen it with Destino as well. We'll talk about it in a second. That
yes,
these finishers are starting
that's
to...
That's kind of different with the Destino.
It's a little different, true. I will concede that. But in this match, three Rainmakers held onto the wrist, which he always does, which once was a big spot. And I think we could tone that down. I don't think that would hurt anything. But, you know, it put Sonata over. Sonata didn't get the win, though. Okada ended up scoring the win here. His undefeated streak continues.
Yeah.
And it was a solid match, but like you said, there was just something missing from this match. I felt like that prevented it from going to that next level.
You know, these two wrestlers are so incredibly good that nothing ever goes wrong when they wrestle. Or hardly ever anything goes wrong. If something...
And their personalities are just, they make it look so easy in their face. They never, you know, there's never any emotion or anything like that.
And if in their matches, maybe something went wrong in their matches, that would give them their matches another layer, another edge, you know?
Yeah. And we saw that a little bit with Sonata's matches with the aforementioned Yoshihashi last year.
Right.
Their tag matches. I think that really helped him a lot, Sonata in particular. And saw his matches with Tanahashi. Tanahashi not quite as smooth. Still really good, really talented in that way. But I think I thought his matches with Tanahashi were better than this match. This is basically what I'm getting.
Of course, this is absolutely high-level nitpicking, which we're doing here. This match was... great.
Still a really strong match.
Absolutely a very strong match. Okada being undefeated here, just as Kenny Omega was still on this night. And you really gotta wonder what the person has to do to put Okada away. If there is a person. if there is.
That's exactly what I said.
Yes.
Yeah, that's exactly what I said, and I have a take we'll go to a little later on about the future of this tournament. But let's move on real quick before we get.
Yeah. So we had the show from the Sendai Sun Plaza Hall, G1 Climax Day 7. That was from July 26th in a building that I really, really like. They use it for the Best of the Super Junior Finals, and I just love the atmosphere that this almost, yes, circular building creates.
Yeah, it's really nice. I like it, too. I definitely totally agree with you on that. I took note of that as well. And how was the show?
Yeah, so I thought the show, it's always difficult with those G1 Climax shows because they set such a high standard with the first day of the tournament and also with the second and third day. I thought the show was good. Within the G1 Climax shows we had so far, it probably was either the weakest or the second weakest show. But still.
Maybe I'm crazy when it comes to this, but I really like this show. I didn't think it was one of the worst shows at all. I thought it was a really good show.
I saw some
up and down. No bad matches.
No, there were no bad matches. That's absolutely correct. I don't know what it was. First match we had here was Tomohiro Ishii defeating Yoshihashi. Ishii at that point with 4 points and Yoshihashi still down at 2. Almost 16 minutes, and I don't know, Dylan, I couldn't really get into this match. I liked the finishing stretch, but I don't know, it felt to me that those two on this particular day weren't really clicking.
Wow, I'm surprised by that, because I like this match.
Yes, I've read that on Twitter and, from different people, but I don't know what it was.
I thought this match was really laid out well overall, and I thought it told a really good story of Ishii being kind of a big brother type to Yoshihashi. This reminded me almost of a poor man's, and obviously they wrestle a different style, but a poor man's version of Miyahara versus Jake Lee in a lot of ways. They kind of told a similar story here with Yoshihashi pushing Ishii to the brink, but still not having quite enough to beat the Stone Pitbull. I thought it was a good match. I thought both men wrestled very well. There was a lot of hard-hitting action here, and I thought it was logical. And I liked it. I don't have anything to say about that, but I like it.
Absolutely not saying that this match wasn't good. Just saying that
I thought this was honestly as good as that main event with Sonata and Okada. Like,
really?
I had the same star rating for them.
Okay.
Yeah. I thought it was really good.
I really can't put my finger on it. I don't know. But,
Do you think that G1 fatigue is getting to you?
Yeah, that may be a point. We're seeing so many singles matches. We are so seeing so many high-level singles matches. And that may be a point. And I'm very certain that Yoshihashi and Tomohiro Ishii will prove me wrong eventually when they go in with other opponents. So let's just wait and see here. Then on this show, we had one of my most anticipated matches in the G1 Climax because I couldn't really imagine how this would work out. We saw some of that in a tag match on the show on the day before. But here, Zack Sabre Jr. going up to 6 points, defeated Bad Luck Fale, who is at 4 points, in 9 minutes with a cradle version. And Dylan, I really liked this one because it told a very simple yet effective story of Zack Sabre Jr. being the smaller guy trying to conquer the big, bad brick wall that is Bad Luck Fale. And he tried to do it with his limb work, with his submissions. He tried to get in the Manjigatame on Bad Luck Fale. At some point, it looked like he would get the octopus stretch on him. He had his arm clutched, but Bad Luck Fale was just too huge and pulled off a sidewalk slam out of Zack Sabre's own submission move. And he managed to get around all these usual submission moves that Zack Sabre does, which then led to Zack Sabre still being able to chop down the giant and in the end pin him. So I thought this story was told very well here.
Yep, it had a story that was very clear right from the start of the match. And I totally agree with everything you said here. I like this match, too. I had no problems with what we saw here. I thought there was another well-laid-out match that told a story, much like the first one. This was different. This was a little shorter. I thought this was Fale's best match to date in the G1, and it only went to 9 minutes, like you said. And I like the way Zach handled this match. I really like what we saw here. Another good match, I thought, to start the show.
Right, and with opponents like Zach, this sub-10-minute matches mm-hmm. are probably the best way for Fale to go.
Yep. Yeah, if Fale, you know, he's had a little bit of a rough start here, but he's got a chance to put it together, you know, and we started to see that here with Zach, and I thought they did a real good job here. Like you said, just a great clash of styles. You know, it's nice to see something different every once in a while.
Yes, and in total, clash of styles was in the next match as well, with Togi Makabe at 4 points defeating Kota Ibushi. Before the show started, we saw that Tomoki Honma was in the building, and he was in commentary for the entire show. So just very nice to see that the Tomoki Honma is doing better. He a couple of weeks ago, it was announced that he's able to walk again, and you could see that he's getting better, and that's nice to see. So he was in commentary for his tag team partner Togi Makabe, defeating Kota Ibushi in 13 minutes 20 seconds. I thought this was a very good, I wouldn't say, but a good match with Togi Makabe working hard again. And I gotta say, he laid out some great strikes, and when he came from the top rope with his variation of the King Kong knee drop, he now does this kind of glancing knee drop where he hits the opponent in the face coming from the top rope while the opponent is still standing. It looked like he hit Kota Ibushi right in the face here with that, and then he follows up with his regular King Kong knee drop. So Makabe again working hard in a good match against Ibushi.
Yeah, Makabe even tried to hit this kind of like Pele kick almost at one point of this match. I'm not going to say this was a 10 on the scale, but for him doing it, you know, just the effort was...
Yes, right. he was trying hard. New.
Yeah, exactly. God bless you, Makabe. But no, I got to say, I thought this was about, you know, similar in total quality to the last match, without as clear of a story, more of a, like you said, a traditional Clash of Style match. But the crowd was really invested. I think they're getting behind Makabe here with these wins that he's going on. I think Honma being there helped, and this was just a feel-good moment for Makabe to win. We were talking about on Twitter, me and Drell. He was saying how, and a lot of people have said this, that they didn't think Makabe should have main evented the previous show and he shouldn't have won. But to me, Makabe is getting the crowd behind him here, and I think he's got a hot story with Honma.
The crowd behind him every single time.
Yeah, and with Honma there, there's potential here with him to go on a run and tell a story at least, which I think is good. I don't know how far we could go with that, but I'm not going to sit here and claim to be a fan of his at all. I actually think he's kind of bland and not that great. But in this G1, he's held his own. You know, when you look at his matches with Goto and Makabe, those were two of his best matches, and this was a really good match too. You know, so I think he's really held his own at this tournament. So I have no criticisms of Makabe in this tournament. Ibushi continues to be one of the best in the tournament, if not the best. According to my ratings, he's actually the best person overall right now. And I would have no problem with anyone arguing he is the MVP right now. So just real, real good stuff here. Nothing wrong. Another good match here. I like the show.
You know, earlier today I saw a tweet that I don't have the exact words in front of me, but kind of that maybe Togi Makabe was great all the time, but the podcast people haven't claimed that yet. You know, there is more than black and white. Togi Makabe isn't the best wrestler in the world, and Togi Makabe isn't the worst wrestler in the world. He's just a guy who has his brawling style, and that brawling style doesn't appeal to necessarily a lot of fans, but he works hard, and he's just solid in what he does, and nothing more, I think.
I only disagree with that him working hard in those undercard tag matches.
Yeah, well, that's a different story.
but I give him his props. You know, like I said, I'm not going to say he's the greatest or whatever, but in this tournament, he's done a very solid job. Definitely fit in the multi-talented block of Block A. he's held his own, and I give him credit for that.
And you know what I give him credit for is that he sometimes is able to work these undercard tag matches without taking a single bump.
Very, very old school to do that. So yeah, definitely some good stuff there. And after the match too, after the match they cut to Honma and he had a great smile when Nakamura won. So I thought that was a really feel-good moment.
Right, it was. It certainly was. And then, main event of that... No, one match missing.
Semi-main
match that told another great story with Tetsuya Naito, of course, being the dick here and absolutely... showing no respect to the elders here in form of Yuji Nagata. It's in the end it worked out for Tetsuya Naito, but he had to work harder than he initially thought. And what I like about Tetsuya Naito especially that you can see it on his face when he's totally surprised about his opponent being much better than he initially thought and being much better than Naito gives them credit for. And that was exactly the case with Yuji Nagata here. Naito was really playing around with Nagata until you could see it in Nagata's face as well, that he was getting fed up with it and fought back and was on the verge of winning until Tetsuya Naito bursted out this kind of modified Destiny. We talked about that earlier in the show already. Kind of a modified Destiny version, a desperation Destiny, so to speak, and won it with the regular Destiny. Very good match here.
Yeah, you know, they started this match off with some good counters, very similar to Nagata's match with Goto. I really liked that, how they started off the match here. That's something that gets Naito out of his show a little bit. Nagata had some great fire here, as he always does in these matches. And, you know, I liked what we saw here. This was a very solid match. They did some good stuff with the counters. Nagata kicking out of the Destino, got a big reaction from the crowd. And, you know... when you look at this match, I think it might have been actually, maybe fatigue is hitting me, but I thought this was a minor step down from his first three, but still really good stuff here. And it's interesting now that for Nagata, Naito with the win, obviously, Nagata one loss away from elimination coming up. So we'll see how that plays out, because this is crunch time for Nagata. Will he be able to pull out a win and go on a big winning streak and win the tournament from here on up?
Yeah. That's gonna be the story. That's gonna be the story. I'm not sure how that works out for Nagata, but as we mentioned, very very good match here.
Yeah, good match.
And this show was main evented by Hiroshi Tanahashi against Hiroki Goto. Both started at 4 points in this match, and Hiroshi Tanahashi took the lead here with 6 points, defeating Hiroki Goto with the high fly flow in a, I thought, yeah, very very good main event match. And this was a Goto match I liked, Dylan.
Yeah, kind of, I think, similar in quality to the... wait a minute. First of all, you said... was this the one you thought was meh? The show that you thought was meh? Because you've, like, praised every match.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
we don't even know.
We don't even know what we're talking about. Maybe I just like the other shows better. I don't know. Yeah.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah,
but well, I like the show.
Maybe I just have a little bit of bad taste in my mouth because I didn't like Ishii versus Yoshihashi, and I don't know why.
Yeah, that's very, very disappointing.
But Hiroki Goto in this match, he did some different things, and I liked the story they were going with in this match. Of course, here revolving around Tanahashi's injured biceps, and very early on in the match, the commentary team brought up the possibility of Hiroki Goto going for the Shoryu Kekai, this modified armbar he does. And early on, Hiroki Goto was working over Hiroshi Tanahashi's arm a lot, and Tanahashi had to fight back. And again, we talked about Tanahashi's selling while being on the offense, and he did this again here when he did elbow strikes against Hiroki Goto. Again, very, very good effort by Hiroshi Tanahashi. And what I took away from this match is what made it different to me is that it added a layer to Hiroki Goto's matches, because a lot of Hiroki Goto's recent singles matches were a lot of interaction with elbows and strikes and also reversing stuff, and here it was just added with a little bit more groundwork, and to me, a very good main event here.
Yeah, I think this was kind of similar to the Nagata match that he had here. They worked a similar type deal here. Like you mentioned, all the stuff you mentioned was totally true. And I also thought that the crowd was into Goto by the end here, going into the finish stretch. I thought that was good. They really made it feel like they believed he could get the win here, which was good. And we know he can. Yeah, you know, and I thought they had a good match. I thought this was a little bit, this was the best match on the show with the crowd. It felt like a really solid main event. And just a real, real solid match. Nothing, no complaints. I think Goto's had a great run in the G1 thus far. Tanahashi as well. I think you're going to see some more of different stuff from Goto now that he's not facing Makabe and Ishii. now he's, you know, wrestling people that he could have different styles of matches with. But,
Ibushi,
you know, I was actually thinking, Ibushi, very, very much so. Yeah, he's definitely right up there. I totally agree with you about the Shoryu Kekkai. That was one of his old finishers that he used.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually brought it back last year for like a strange, no real reason giving. But at the end of last year, he started winning matches with this move. Which I thought was cool, though. I thought it was really cool. That's what I like about Goto. I think he's actually the opposite of that because he does different stuff sometimes just for no reason. that's not built up. And I like that of him. And I would love to see that move or any sort of different move come into play more here. We didn't really see it. We didn't see that story play out fully here because Tanahashi cut it off to get the win.
Yep.
I had no problem with that. Tanahashi has another strong run. And like I said, I think both of these guys are going to be around near the end. So this just sets up that I think this is something I predicted at the start of the tournament. I think Goto will, this is my prediction right here, I think Goto will beat Naito later on in the tournament. Set up Goto's, if Naito were to win this tournament, it will set Goto's annual bi-yearly February title loss that he will
or
have.
Or maybe even the match for the briefcase.
Sure. that could totally work too. But I think this sets up Goto to beat Naito to balance things out with the block. But still, I really like this show, Striga, overall.
Yeah,
I thought it was
a
really strong
As
overall.
We talked about each and every match on this show, now I got to pull back on my rating here for this being one of the weakest. I don't know. I have to go back and do another evaluation process, I guess. But before I do that, let's go to today's show, July 27th from Aore Nagaoka, drawing 2,821 people. Not sold out. It holds about 4,000. And, well, kind of a little letdown in G1 aspects, but still I thought it was a good crowd, and especially it was a very vocal and loud crowd, which we saw especially in the semi-main event of this show. But starting it off with the first G1 Climax block match here, this is another Block B day, we had Tama Tonga going over Juice Robinson with the gun stun, and we already mentioned it's an incredible story. People get behind Juice Robinson so much because of the way he wrestles, and here in this G1 Climax especially because the way he sells his leg, and maybe there is something that is wrong with him, we don't know, because you really can't tell if he's just great on selling or if he's legitimately hurt. So, Dylan, how did you like this one?
Another one of those opening matches that is nothing too crazy or fancy or anything like that. Just solid, meat and potatoes, good match between these two. Like you mentioned, Juice having a breakout, you know, tournament here. Totally agree with you on the selling. Have no issues at all with what he's doing right now. Some really cool stuff going on with Juice, and I think he's been one of the breakout characters of the G1 thus far. Tonga, to me, had another good performance, and I think he's actually been one of the most consistent players of the tournament.
Yes, and he's kind of these dark horse performers that you really don't recognize being so good, because there are guys like Okada, Sanada, and Nagata, Ibushi, and so on, but Tama Tonga is putting out really, really good singles matches here.
Yeah, I think he's been pretty much solid in every one of his matches. I think he's missing, I think what would help him a lot is if he had just had that one big, big match that he could have.
Yeah.
You know, that would really say he's arrived, because he's been solid in all of his matches, but he's missing that one excellent match that I think would put him over. Similar to Juice's match versus Naito earlier in the year. But Tonga, have no problem with him. He did a good, solid job here. And this was a fine opening match to the show, in my opinion.
Yeah, I was totally intrigued with the story they told. Once again, I was sitting on the edge of my seat just cheering for Juice Robinson to please finally get in the Pulp Friction. But Tama Tonga was able to counter it out again and again. He then low kicked Juice Robinson at his injured leg, and was able to in the end get the gun stun after Juice Robinson countered it twice. So again, here, very well told story. And
Juice is another one of those wrestlers that wrestles that's not always clean with how he wrestles. He's another one of those has his own style to him that's not cookie cutter. So I really enjoy watching him, just the way he moves around the ring, the way he wrestles. I really enjoyed that.
From there, we went to a match that was totally up your alley, because Toru Yano had a match that was under 5 minutes, 4 minutes and 33 seconds. I wanted this to be under 3 minutes. But, you know, I gotta say, to this match, to the usual part of Toru Yano clowning around in the G1 Climax, here we have a compelling story that was added to his usual clowning around with the duct tape that was used in the Kenny Omega match. He wanted to use that again here, but Zanada just took it and threw it through the entire arena. So Toriano was robbed from one of his main go-to finishing moves, the duct tape. And also, on the show on the day prior, there was a tag match Toriano and Yano against Zanada and Bushi, and Yano and Yado were able to win that match in 45 seconds. And in this match, Yado was trapped in the Paradise Lock. And on this morning, we got the news that Yado is out due to a left knee injury. And I hope he didn't suffer that knee injury from the Paradise Lock. But I think it was the neck breaker from Tanahashi, where he twisted his knee on day 6 of the Climax. So Yado being trapped in the Paradise Lock, and Yano had to pick him up after he forgot him in the ring. And here on this day, Zanada did the Paradise Lock on Toru Yano on the outside, on the stage. And Toru Yano, he was also trapped with duct tape, so he was unable to get back into the ring. And he suffered another count-out loss here from the hands of Zanada. And I really enjoyed this one.
No one can pin Toru Yano.
No.
He's one of our most protected men in the tournament so far. What do you think of the Paradise Lock? Because that's gotten a lot of talk on Twitter.
Yeah, the Paradise Lock is... I thought this was the best way you can use the Paradise Lock. Because inside the ring it looks kind of goofy, but how they used it here to get a count-out win was absolutely great.
Yeah, I actually kind of agree with you. In the nonsensical world of Yano matches, this was actually perfect for the Paradise Lock, which is kind of like a weird modified version of the Delphin Clutch, I guess, is the best way I can describe it. Milano Collection AT's old move, obviously. But so I thought it worked out well. Under 5 minutes, I'm not going to say it was the least offensive Yano match thus far in terms of a regular match. And it still had its moments of making me smirk.
And also, also great detail about this is how they always cut to Milano Collection AT on commentary, explaining how the Paradise Lock works. He's explaining it with his hands. That's so great.
I know. That's how, I talk the same way where I explain things with my hands.
I always talk about. I always talk like this when we do the podcast, and then I remember people can see me doing the podcast.
Me too. I do that too plenty of times. Don't worry about it.
Okay. So let's go to Evil and Minoru Suzuki. Your take on this match, please.
I think my take can be summed up in 3 words. Everything is evil.
Yes, I really enjoyed how Evil and Minoru Suzuki worked together. Another great finishing stretch for Evil here. They had their usual Ingobernables versus Suzuki-gun interference that, again, got a lot of heat from the crowd. It didn't have to be there necessarily for me, but... didn't take away anything from the match. Good, solid match here in a little under 9 minutes.
Yeah, I didn't really like the match, to be honest with you, with the interference and everything. But I was happy Evil won.
Right.
That was my main takeaway. There was parts also in this match. Not only were there interference with Tai Chi, of course, He knocked out Evil with a chair. Hiromu came out and stuff, but Suzuki hit Evil with the chair in clear view of the ref here.
Yeah.
Right? So clearly,
again, playing to my point that referees have absolutely no leverage and no authority whatsoever in Japanese wrestling.
Well, he could. Like, he could.
He could have.
Yeah, yeah, he could have. He just didn't want to. Like, I don't know. But yeah, so, yeah, there's a lot of crazy, stupid stuff here. The Suzuki match. Suzuki has shown me absolutely nothing in this tournament, to be honest, in his matches. I mean, I like...
Still, you're booked
to
the final.
Has a, well, I regret that. He still may be in the final, but yeah, with how things have played out. But I hope I'm wrong with that, but... Basically, my point of this is his matches, when he was just having a straight wrestling match, were okay for what they were. They were solid, but even then, they weren't exactly lighting, he wasn't exactly lighting the world on fire. And this match, I thought, was Evil's probably worst match thus far. But yeah, Evil won, yeah. So that is a good thing. Everything is Evil, and that's all that matters.
Everything is Evil, and in the semi-main of this show, everything is Okada, because Okada picked up his... fourth win, going up to 8 points, while his opponent, such as Kojima, now with 4 losses at the bottom of the block. 15 minutes, 26 seconds, he won with the Rainmaker. I think he again used 2 or 3 Rainmakers in this match.
Yep.
But the great thing about this match was that Satoshi Kojima also has his Rainmaker counter with his regular lariat he does, and he did the lariat once to the back of Okada, and once he had a brilliant counter lariat with his left arm when Okada was going for the Rainmaker. Many great spots here, many hope spots for Satoshi Kojima, maybe being able to defeat Okada. Okada was booed heavily by the crowd here. The crowd wanted Satoshi Kojima to get the win, and it was funny because Okada, when the match started, was cheering with the crowd, was cheering Kojima with the crowd, but then of course he had to attack Kojima, and the crowd was on Kojima's side heavily. Awesome match here, I gotta say. Awesome match, Okada. This was a completely different match from that what he had with Zanada, because there were a lot of more edges and not such a smooth style that he had with Zanada, because Kojima is a completely different opponent. And Kojima, in the end, I don't know, we had a discussion on Twitter, was he going for the Tenzan Tombstone Driver, or was he going for his move, the CCD?
I think you could call it either way.
Yeah, right.
You know, we'd have to see where that played out before we say. But, you know, I like this match, too. You know, I totally agree with you. I thought this was a really strong performance for both guys. Two guys that are kind of not talked about in the upper echelon is similar to Omega, that we'll talk about in a second. But I think both of these guys have had really strong tournaments for Block B thus far. And I've really enjoyed Okada. I have to give him props here, for the tournament he's had. Another really good showing for both men. I really like that Okada played into the boos that he had, turned it on, similar to someone like Tanahashi we've seen in the past. And I thought he did a great job of really... showing growth in his ability to do that here. And I thought Kojima, obviously a very big fan favorite. I also like Tenzan on the outside, cheering on his best friend,
right,
getting the crowd behind him. I thought he did a great job. And I will say this, my one criticism is, I saw someone on Twitter try to coin Kojima's lariat the Eastern Lariat.
Yes.
No. That's not how this goes. Listen, I'm not saying, I mean, you may agree or disagree with this, but I think we would be happy to lend that name to him, but just give us some props, Kojima. That's all we ask. If you want to take the Eastern Lariat name, that's all we want. It's just a little shout-out. We're Bread Club members. You know, come on. That's all I ask. But great match, though. I really like it.
We could get a little Eastern Lariat logo tattoo on Kojima's lariat.
No, he's Japanese. That's proud of
him. Right.
Yeah, that's proud to find. But maybe like a little wristband or something.
Yeah,
with our
maybe that.
Great match, though.
As a former MLW heavyweight champion, he could really do that.
Yeah, that's right. Totally, the connection is there. So really good stuff all around. Really enjoyed both of these guys. I think they're two underrated talents, regardless of win-loss record.
And you know, as you just talked about Okada, I reflected on last year's UN Climax, because we were heavily criticizing Okada's tournament last year, and up until the match he had with Tomohiro Ishii, we frequently said that Okada hasn't showed up to the G1 Climax, and this year he had great performances from day one.
Yeah, yeah, the match with Elgin was a big match. This one is another great match in his catalog here, you know.
Yep.
I have no problems with Okada in this tournament at all. I think he's had a kind of a low-key run, but the best record of everyone in the tournament as well, while still not being talked about. But
oh, yeah.
Just good stuff here from these two.
And in the main event, it was again time for Kenny Omega to make it up to Katsuchika Okada, because Katsuchika Okada went to 8 points and Omega was still at 6, but Omega wasn't able to do that. He lost to Michael Elgin. Elgin up to 4 points. Kenny Omega remains at 6. It says here that Michael Elgin won this match with a burning hammer. And we had the same discussion when Daisuke Sekimoto defeated Hideyoshi Kamitani in December. That wasn't a proper burning hammer either. And this one was an Argentine coaster, and this is my final word on that.
Listen, you're totally right, though. This isn't even a debate that we can have. No. This is not a matter of opinion. This is not a burning hammer.
No.
So, yeah, so what did you think of this match, though, besides the burning hammer controversy between these two?
What I have to say about this match, again, not going through single spots as we did with Zanada and Okada, I was very entertained by the performance those two men had here, and I thought they had some brilliant stuff in this match. And the one thing I would say about this match is that they took it too far. They didn't take it as far or that far that I wouldn't call it a match that I enjoyed, because there was no overkill in my estimation. It was a match with two guys that are portrayed as guys that can beat anybody in this tournament as top level guys, and as being top level guys, those guys kick out of a lot of stuff because they are very good. Maybe they took it a little far, but I really enjoyed the pace they went, and I really enjoyed the overall match they did here in 25 minutes.
Yeah, there was a lot of action in this
match,
a lot of moves. You know, I kind of agree with you, to be honest with you. I still enjoyed it overall for what it was, but I could definitely see why you would say that. You know, why they would say there's too much. You know, and I, like I said, I still enjoyed it overall. Not going to say it was bad or anything like that. And I think it was Elgin really needed this win, and he got it over Omega, so that was good to see. And I did like how on the last episode I mentioned that I thought there was a chance Omega and Okada could both be undefeated heading into the last night. And I go on Twitter, and it's like everyone else is saying there's no doubt this will happen. And I was wondering where that came from or why people were thinking that. Because I thought it was just like an off-the-wall idea I had. But, you know, this thing with Elgin, like I said, it was a good match. Everything you said was totally true. Lots of V-triggers. Elgin got some big power bombs in there. The burning hammer, quote-unquote, to win this. So just a lot of good stuff. And nothing wrong to say here. It was a pretty solid show, I would say, for Block B. And Block B was kind of struggling a little bit, but they're starting to get things together in B Block.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. This was a very good show for Block B, I thought, with a lot of strong performances here, especially, I think you can call Kojima versus Okada match of the night.
If you
take into consideration how the crowd reacted to it. So, very, very good show again for New Japan Pro Wrestling here as the G1 Climax moves on. But Dylan, before we end this show, we of course...
Wait, let me stop before that, because there's something I want to say about G1 before we move on. And I think we should... We do this, we've done this before. Before the tournament started, you picked Elgin to go to the finals.
Mm-hmm.
And I picked Suzuki, obviously. A terrible pick. Not that it's not possible he doesn't make it, just because if it happens, I'll hate him. But I was looking at the standings as well as the schedule for the matches here, and I want your take on something here. Elgin with his two losses, Okada undefeated right now, including one of...
Yeah.
Okada's beat Elgin. He has the tiebreaker over him. Elgin got a big win here getting the tiebreaker over Omega, which is good. However, I was looking at the schedule, and with this tiebreaker, the only way that Elgin can make the finals here. This is a storyline you need to watch for later on. If this happens, you heard it here first. The only way Elgin can make the finals, he has to win out, and Okada must lose 3 matches to avoid having Elgin lose the tiebreaker. Elgin's next 2 matches are against Juice and Tonga. So his last 3 matches are Evil, Suzuki, and Omega. And I don't think it's impossible that that happens, but I just think that that is a really... It's a big stretch to expect that here. What do you think of how they booked this tournament thus far? We obviously we have to wait until it plays out before we know for sure. But are you still confident in Elgin making the final? Because Suzuki has a similar problem. He's got 2 losses, but he has yet to lose to Okada.
Yeah, the chances are getting slimmer. But you know, it's these tournament situations that New Japan always creates where these slim percentages of something happening happen in the end. So I will still leave this open. I think they booked this tournament extremely well because you mentioned it when we talked about the G1 Climax for the first time. We had our takes in the finals. Then after day 3, we discussed some different possibilities, and now we have Okada being undefeated and we can't see who he is losing to. So we again have a different possibility of who is winning this one. So they are really creating a lot of question marks for us viewers, and that is what I like about this tournament.
Yeah, that's what I said the last episode. It's hard for me to see Okada losing to anybody in this tournament right now as things stand, because it's just like they've done such a great job. It's the opposite of what they did with Hiromu and the Best of the Super Juniors. They're doing such a great job as a champion. I don't want to see him lose 3 matches in a row after. And didn't they do something similar to that last year with Okada, where he started out hot and lost heading into the final night with Tana?
Yeah,
I feel like
he didn't lose to Tana, or it was a draw.
No. I'm saying he leading into the match with Tana, he lost 2 matches in a row. I think to Ishii and Fale. And they told that story of Tanahashi losing his first matches and coming back.
I think I
think, and I talked about this. I teased this last episode. If you put a gun to my head, where they're at right now in the booking, I think that there is a legitimate chance, a chance that keeps growing the more I think about it. I'm almost talking myself into it. And I mentioned the reasons why on the last episode, some clues they may have left here. But I think Evil has a real chance. If he could beat Okada, then that would give him the tiebreaker, first of all.
Yep.
And I think that would put him in great position. That's the thing that Elgin lacks, is that all-important tiebreaker. So I think Evil, he's someone to watch. And that, those last 3 matches for Okada, Evil, Suzuki, and Omega, I think those are going to be real, real big stuff. So I'm really interested to see that.
And you got to take into consideration, sorry for cutting you off there, but I was just remembering that Okada still has the win in the IWGP Heavyweight title over Suzuki. So, you
know. Yep, that's right. That's another thing there. I could see that happening. Those are 3 guys that are a threat to beat Okada. So if they wanted to go there, I just think that they've done such a good job with Okada. And like I said, I say this as a long-time critic of this, that I really like how they're handling his title reign, and I hope that they have some... if that happens, I hope there's a good explanation behind it, to say the least. But I like what they've done with Block B in terms of booking. I really like... I think A has all the great matches, but it still feels like Naito's going to win, and there's not a lot of drama to anybody else right now. But Block B is more interesting when it comes to what's going to happen.
Right. So that was our take on the G1 Climax shows, but we got a question from one of our favorite listeners, Drella Drell.
Hey. And
Drella Drell says, "Greetings, gentlemen. For once, I do not have a question involving ladies, but instead it relates to the current Young Lions." And he adds, "I mean the 4 that I've seen wrestle. You have both mentioned them briefly on occasion whilst recapping the matches they were in, but I would like to know whether you disagree or agree with my own opinions. So, from my worst to my best, here's what I have observed. Shota Umino seems very inexperienced and tends to botch some moves. His enthusiasm is like Kawato's." What's your take on that, Dylan?
Well, I do think he's got a lot of enthusiasm. I think, well, first of all, he is very inexperienced.
Yes.
Of all the rookies. He hasn't wrestled a lot, so I think that that is definitely possible. What you said is true, but maybe I, in my viewing, has just subconsciously cut him slack on that. But I like him, to be honest with you. I think he's pretty good for a young lion. What do you think, Strick?
Yeah, on today's show, he had a match with Ren Narita, who is the newest young lion. Shota Umino.
Even less.
Yeah, right. Shota Umino and Ren Narita, they faced El Desperado and Zack Sabre Jr. And I tweeted, what I always like about these G1 Climax opening matches, or even the Young Lions matches, is that those young lions show a lot of fire, enthusiasm, and of course, I really enjoy the story about them using basic moves and always having to improve and use more difficult moves in order to, in the end, maybe get a win over an experienced mid-carder. So, yeah. Definitely, Umino being inexperienced is definitely true. Ren Narita as inexperienced. He debuted a little bit later. But, I can see where he's coming from with that take.
Yeah, I'd probably rank him the fourth. Yeah. If who he's going to say is who I think he's going to say. I think I would agree with that.
Position number three for Deladrill is Ketsuya Kitamura. Is in awesome shape and has a great physique thanks to his genetics. And his diet of anabolic chicken that rarely has five moves of doom. Moves like he's underwater. Even Nakanishi moves quicker than him. Well,
ouch.
Well, that was a devastating take on Kitamura, and I'm not sure how he made position number three with that. So, Kitamura has an amazing, amazing physique, and his presence is incredible. His enthusiasm is great, but yeah, He of course still lacks a lot of I don't know what to call it, but he needs to learn to move better inside the ring. But still, he's very early in his career, and he lives from being the monster that he is right now.
Striga, what's your take on this anabolic chicken epidemic that we've seen?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I might have to do some research on that.
Yeah, I think he has ingested more things than chicken, Mr. Kitamura, based on some pictures I've seen of him in the past to now. But this guy, you know, he's a big muscle guy. Like there's yes. there's really no way around it. I don't know how he's going to turn. He's someone that I think has the most chances for a different outcome in his career. I feel like of all the four guys, I think he could go wildly one way or a different way. The more we see him, mm-hmm. depending on how he takes to this wrestling thing and how he learns to move, as you said, we could be seeing, another John Strongman, mm-hmm. or we could be seeing a really the next big thing, literally the next big thing in New Japan. So I think we could see a lot of different ways for him to go. But right now, I think he's got a big presence to him, like you said. I think that's what's going to carry him for the next little while.
Yep. Agree with that. Then, position number two for him is Tomoyuki Oka. Looks like an ex-sumo, but is very capable in the ring. His lack of pectorals annoys me for some reason. Excuse me?
I said, what?
Yeah. Lack of pectoral annoy me for some reason, but that's my only complaint. I can't picture how he'll be after his excursion, but I'm looking forward to it. Tomoyuki Oka is probably the guy with the most upside right now in the ranks of the Young Lions. Hirai Kawato, who Dread Red put in position number one, he's in front of Oka now because of the experience, edge, and because he's just been in there longer and knows how to move better than Oka does. Oka has the promotion behind him, and Oka has the amateur wrestling experience. He's not an ex-sumo, he's an ex-amateur wrestler, and he also did MMA, so that is a legitimate background, and a legitimate background is always something that you can use very well in pro wrestling in Japan, especially. And so Oka has the best upside here.
Yeah, he definitely has that amateur wrestling background, very much a lolicon background as well for Oka, if you've seen his Twitter at times. But this guy, like you said, I think you described exactly what I was going to say perfectly. The company is behind him more than any of the other young lions, and he's going to get every chance to be a big star. And done pretty well so far, to be honest. As a young lion, I think he's taken to the ring pretty well. He's a pet project of Nagata's as well, so mm-hmm. you're going to see a lot of Nagata's influence rub off on him, especially early on. It'll be interesting to see how he goes along his path and what path he takes into becoming his own wrestler going right. forward after he graduates from the Young Lion stage. I think Kawato is the best right now, as you mentioned. And I think he could turn out to be the best. He's got a connection with the crowd that is trumps the others
he totally
as
has
of now.
This weird underdog babyface charisma around him. And let me just say what Redadrell has to say about Kawato. He says, okay. My favorite. Looks like Kota Ibushi's little brother, but has tons of babyface charisma. Plus, he has plenty of intensity that will come in handy for big matches in the future. Teenage girls will love him, and he'll have them trying to force their way into his hotel room against his will.
What?
Please, Redadrell, come on.
You're the man. I don't know about that, but I like his charisma. Like you said, he's such a natural baby face. He really is. And not only has he got that plucky underdog charisma, he also has a bit of charisma that he has more guts than brains sometimes right now as the young one.
We talked about him and Suzuki.
He's always the one that wants to tag in and fight no matter who it is. On the other team, he's always going to be the one that tags in. He's always moving around the ring. He's always got a good frenetic pace to him when he wrestles. And I really love watching him as a young lion right now. It's going to be interesting to see how he changes. All these guys are going to undergo big changes, you know. Yep. Compare, and that's why I always try to caution people declaring someone the next big thing when they're still a young lion, because look at Hiromu Takahashi now. And when he was a young lion.
Right.
He's so different. And
look at
Desperado. Way different now than he was. As a lot better, actually. He was not a legendary young lion, I have to say, or anything like that. But he's really improved, and we could see someone like that. We could see Umino. He may be the one that breaks out by the end of it. You just never know with these young lions. We're going to have to see how they take the different styles of wrestling, how they grow, what kind of passion they have. And Kawato, to me, and this is total speculation on my part, obviously. I'm not in the dojo, unfortunately. Or fortunately, actually. I wouldn't want to be there in New Japan. But he comes across to me like someone with a great passion for wrestling. And I think that is one of the most important parts of a wrestler that nobody really talks about or can understand very well. But I think he has, and I really look forward to seeing what becomes of him, because I love what he does now, and I really like Oka as well. You know, I think the young lions as a whole are all great, even some of the ones you didn't mention. They all have really good potential, and for their place, for how long they've wrestled, you have to give them their props for it, because I think they've all done a great job.
Exactly. I think he's one of those guys that you can eventually find footage of sitting in Kurikan Hall watching wrestling shows. Like, I think they did it for Naito once.
Yep.
And DDT did it for Konosuke Takeshita and Keisuke Ishii too. And so I think Kawato really has a lot of passion, as you mentioned.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. So if you want to get into interaction with us just like Dreladrell did, you can do that if you send us an email. The email address is japan@mlw.com. That's japan@mlw.com. And if you want to get in even more direct interaction with us, as Dreladrell did as well this morning with Dylan, talking about Hiroki Goto, you can do that via Twitter. I am at Striga, STRIGGA, and Dylan, where are you at?
Catch me at Dylan Zero Sky. Spell out the zero in the middle of the name. It's not just a number. But yeah, you can talk to me about wrestling, anabolic chicken, whatever. I will talk to you about anything. I'll try to give you an answer to any question you have, if you have a question. If you want to talk about the shows, the G1 shows, I love talking about that too. If you want to criticize me and say that I hate New Japan, then that's fine as well. I accept any and all criticism and comments. But I do appreciate good conversation as well. It could be about anything. You could give me dating advice. That would be good. Like, so really anything you want to talk to me about, I'm totally game.
All right. Yeah. So this has been the Eastern Lariat for this week. We will be back next week talking more G1 Climax action. So thank you. If you have been listening to all of our shows, that really shows dedication, because it takes a lot of time to watch these G1 Climax shows and then in the end even listen to a podcast about it. So thank you. Thank you very much for listening. This has been the Eastern Lariat. Goodbye.
Gomensai. Sayonara.
This is the MLW Radio Network.